Your source for everything paranormal. Para X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para X, its affiliates, or its
bonds. Has come to me in the form of a beautiful dancing green woman. The spirit of the plants has come to me in the form of a beautiful dancing green woman. Her eyes filled me with peace. Her dance filled me with peace. Her eyes filled me with peace. Her dance filled me with peace. The spirit of the plants has come to me in the form of a beautiful dancing green woman. The spirit of the plants has come to me in the form of a beautiful dancing green woman. Her eyes filled me with peace. Her dance filled me with peace. Her eyes filled me with peace. Her dance filled me with peace. The spirit of the plants has come to me and has blessed me with great peace. The spirit of the plants has come to me and has blessed me with great peace. Her eyes filled me with peace. Her dance filled me with peace. Her eyes filled me with peace. Her dance filled me with peace. The spirit of the plants has come to me in the form of a beautiful dancing green woman.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. Now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hey, merry meet everybody, and welcome once again to Stirring the Cauldron here on the Para X Radio Network. Tonight's opening song was more of a chant than a song. It was done by our friend Lisa Thiel off her album, The Journey of the Goddess, and it's called The Spirit of the Plants. And that was chosen because, and very fittingly, my guest is author Harold Roth, and he's among the foremost authorities on plants within the modern occult community. He's a scholar of the occult, practicing magician, and a successful gardener. He's the author of The Witching Herbs and is also the owner of Alchemy Works, which is an online store focused on herb magic, where he crafts and sells incense and potions and magical oils, as well as seeds and all kinds of goodies. And tonight we're going to be talking about plant magic. And I think all of us who practice the craft have used herbs and plants in our magical works, but I'm suspecting that, in my case at least, there's a whole lot more to it than I knew, and I'm excited to learn more. So, Harold, thank you for coming back for another visit and offering to share some more wisdom.
Oh, thanks. I'm glad to be here. Very happy to be here.
I am too, because this is like right up my alley. I love this stuff. And so, as I just told you a minute ago, I did a lot of research and corrected if some of it's wrong, because, you know, I was on the web, what do I know? But I really had a lot of fun. But the first thing I found out was that, and it wasn't a surprise, is that plant magic is a very age-old tradition, dating back to maybe ancient Egyptian times or even further. And it's used for a lot of purposes, like healing, like self-empowerment, like love spells, protection. And we talked about this when you were on the show the last time, that each plant has its own magical property and strengths, and it can be used to add power to any kind of a spell. When did you first get interested in plant magic? Was it the magic first or the plant first, and then they joined, or how did that happen?
Well, I was interested in magic like when I was a teenager, but I didn't get into gardening until I think I was in my 30s. It was in the early 80s. And at first I just grew some like I mean, I had had houseplants, and at first I just grew some regular things like marigolds. And I did. But then gradually I got into it in a big way, and one of the things that I did was I started researching what plants were used for, because I wanted to learn how to make dyes and use them for yarn that I spun. And by doing that, I started learning about the folklore, and then I was like, hey, this is like magic. So they kind of came together that way, this kind of weird back doorway.
I'm just giggling here because Kat in the chat room said, I have a sweet potato plant. It has to be magical. It's the first plant I've ever kept alive this long in ages.
They are cool plants. You know, that's the first plant I ever grew when I was a child.
Really?
My mom would have she would cut a sweet potato in half, and you'd stick toothpicks in it to make it stay suspended in some water, and then it grows vines and things in the house.
I never tried that.
It's fun.
Well, it's probably pretty. I mean, you know, because I don't know. There's just so much to this now that I've read all this. I'm like, wow, where have I been all my life? You know, I mean, I've wasted 3/4 of my life not knowing all this stuff.
And I know what you mean.
Well, no, but you're way ahead of me, too. I'm just like kind of catching up here a little bit. So I'm probably going to throw some things out at you, and you can tell me, you know, if they're correct or not. And then, you know, we'll just kind of flow down here.
Okay.
And so it's important that people know that plant magic works pretty well with any form of magic. I mean, for some people who don't even know about plant magic, they still are going to, like, sprinkle a specific herb into the flame of a candle during a ritual, for example, or... Mm-hmm. You know, they think it would add extra power to your spells, but they may not know exactly the whole deal. But that's just one of the very simple methods of performing plant magic, right?
Mm-hmm. It is. There's all different kinds of ways, and there's different ways that you can... I mean, of course, probably most people know how to work with dried herbs and use them as a kind of a tool. But if you start growing them, like even if you just grow one plant that you want to work with, you find out there's all these other way more powerful ways to work with plants in magic. Mm-hmm. So that it's not just a tool, it goes into becoming more like a teacher.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool.
I like that. And you know... people think, you know, okay, we'll do this, we'll do that. But people that work with magical plants will know, like, leaving small amounts of different type of herbs around your house to remove negative energies or to offer protection. And some of them promote good health. Some of them bring a peaceful energy. So what are some of the herbs that could be used, for example, for protection, and how would you use them around the house?
I would use, for protection, I would use probably... herbs that are ruled by Mars, or even just anything that had thorns, which could cover, like, say, for instance, if you really wanted to get serious about it, you could grow some slow berries, you know, some blackthorn. Or you could, some people even just use the actual thorns from, you know, that have been harvested by somebody else. But one of the things that I do like to emphasize is choose a plant and grow it and ask its help. I mean, even Datura, because it has the spiky pod, can be helpful for protection. So, like, if you just even had one Datura plant in a pot outside on your porch or something, you could ask its spirit to help you in terms of protection, and it, you know... Generally, it would, because it does like to have, it likes devotees. I mean, who doesn't, right?
True.
It likes people to pay attention to it, and, you know. But if you didn't want to work with something as capricious as Datura, you could try like cactuses or, you know, even roses, which are not a Mars plant usually. But it's a thorny thing. I mean, even some people I know have used bougainvillea.
Really?
It's
yeah.
Very thorny.
That's yeah. true. Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you just mentioned roses, and this, it came to mind. I've always had roses growing, and when I lived in my other house, I had a whole driveway full of roses, but there was this one particular rose, and I think it was an old world rose. I mean, it was like a big cabbage rose, you know, the old-fashioned type.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And it had killer, killer thorns on it. Now, I could go ahead and do everything I needed to do, deadheading and all that, with all the other roses except this one. And every time I got near it, I had to just barely look at the thing, and it stuck me. And I got this, like, complex that this rose actually hated me, because all the other ones, and some of them had pretty sharp thorns, too, but this one particular one, every time, just whang, and they were big, fat thorns, too. So I guess the silly question is, do some plants dislike their humans, or you know, why?
I think some plants... I've certainly had the experience of, like, being stung repeatedly by certain plants. Mm-hmm. Like, I had some nettles growing that just, I threw out some old seeds because I didn't think they were any good anymore, right? And they sure were. They grew up in this patch, and I thought it was okay, you know, have a little nettle patch. But then it would get really aggressive, and I'd just be minding my own business. It would feel like it would reach out and, you know, sting me. Mm-hmm. So I did. I was quite harsh about cutting it back. I don't know if it was just ill-disposed or... I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's more... Instead of an individual plants, I feel like the whole group of a plant can have a kind of tricksy attitude and... Well, I definitely feel like belladonna can be like that. Datura can be like that, very much so. And so I guess I feel like it's more to do with the species of the plant than the individual plants.
So it could be like our pets. I mean, if we get a poodle and a pit bull, which one's going to be the more aggressive?
Yeah,
right?
that's a really good parallel. Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, because they're just, I really was getting a complex because this was a beautiful, beautiful rose. And then in the backyard, there was this, you know how some cactuses kind of throw needles at you? They're those really tiny, fine ones that you don't even
feel. Exactly, I was just thinking of that.
Yeah.
It's always the little guys you have to watch out for.
This was a huge plant, right? I mean, a huge cactus. It was the size, it went up to the roof. But it had those stinking little needly things, and every time I walked by there, I'd be picking them out for days. And I wasn't near it, but it's like they spit them at you. So, you know, it kind of made me think that plants have personalities, and maybe this one just wanted to show up. Hey, I can get her, you know, off. And so
it took protection too far.
Well, that's a good point. Maybe I was a little... too soon blaming it on the plant for being mean. So I mean, this is kind of the neat thing to, that people need to know too, maybe. I mean, certain plants, like you said, roses, most people look at roses as love and sweet and kind and all that. But that's because when they get them at the florist, they dethorn them first, right?
But
if you're growing them, you know, they can be sharp, they can hurt. And so it's kind of really fascinating in that sense. Now, I was also reading that, and this might be a myth, that the best time to perform plant magic or collect herbs is at night, especially under the full moon, because it said that plants and herbs are the most powerful at these times. Is that true or wives' tale?
Well, it kind of depends on the plant and what do you want to use it for.
Okay.
Like if the plant part, you know, so like typically, like if you're harvesting leaves, then during the full moon would be the best time because they're the most full of juice. But the full moon can happen during the day too.
Sure.
So it's kind of like, I'm not sure. I guess it would depend on the plan and what you were going to use it for. And I certainly know that in addition to like a magical time, I would also consider a material time. So like certain plants are much more potent, like after the dew has been burned off by the sun, and their essential oils are much stronger. Others, you have to get them like after a rain, or roots are best to dig up in the fall. You know, so like there's different, and then it would depend on what you were going to use it for too.
Sure.
I would think that if you were going to do some kind of moon magic, then harvesting leaves under a full moon would be really great. A great thing to do. Like if you're going to do divination with something, that would be a good time.
All right, here's another question that came to mind, because earlier in the month, I went out just as my big rose started to bloom. It's in a pot, but I suspect that it's crept out of the pot and it's in the ground now. So I'm just leaving there, because if it was in the pot, it wouldn't get that big. But the thing of it was, I walked out there, and we've had, strangely enough, in California, we had a lot of rain for the longest time.
Oh, yeah, and, I've been hearing.
Yeah, and so I went out, and I saw a couple of buds on this rose, and it was a bare root rose that I'd never grown a bare root before. And my good buddy Tim Shaw and his wife sent me this bare root rose. And I thought, oh, I'm going to kill this thing. I've never tried a bare root rose. But anyway, long story short, this thing is, it's lush, it's a floribunda, it's a beautiful rose. But when I went out earlier, a few weeks ago, and I looked at the blooms, there were aphids.
Oh.
And I've not had aphids before, so I thought, you know, this isn't
too
good.
Too fast but it, growth.
Huh? Yeah.
They're attracted to too fast growth. So like the rains that you guys had, that probably pushed the rose to grow really fast. And aphids are attracted to really tender new growth, or a lot of it, especially vegetative, but they will get in buds too.
Well, that's interesting, because then, you know, it rained. I didn't go out again, didn't have to go out and water. And then I went out the other day and I looked, and there's like, you know, a bazillion flowers on it and a bazillion buds and not one aphid in the whole
thing. Oh, wow. Oh, that's great. You know, it could be that bugs that eat aphids came out after.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I was going to try and get some ladybugs. I love buying ladybugs and letting them loose and having them go after them. Because you buy, you open that box of ladybugs and whoosh, you're surrounded. I mean, it's kind of beautiful until they get on you and kind of bite you a little bit every so often.
Oh, they do?
They do. They do bite. I looked, because I had them walking on me. I love ladybugs. And then I felt something pinch me, and I looked down, and it didn't, you know, didn't look guilty or anything, but it, but I did look it up, and they do, they nip at you, little tiny nips.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but I love, you know, because I think, what, there's like 500 ladybugs to a box, and you can get them, anybody can get them at like Home Depot or Lowe's or any garden centers. And they just, they want to escape, and they go flying all over, and it's really kind of nice, you know. But I didn't have to do it. That was very, very cool. So, yeah, I never heard of aphids going away on their own, but I was greatly appreciative that they did.
Some bugs do like to eat them. I think wasps, there are some small wasps that like to catch them and eat them.
Like, I don't know what was out there, but they got them, and I was just, you know, thank you, whoever. Thank you, universe, because I
know. Yeah, that sounds wonderful.
I totally hate aphids. All right, so I'm jumping back into something else now. People carry charm bags, like mojo bags in voodoo or you know, whatever you want to call them in any other path that you're on, with a variety of herbs to bring things like protection or attract love. I guess you could say they were a sachet, but sometimes you don't. I think sachet is basically all dried herbs, isn't it? As compared
to, and powdered. I always think of sachets as powdered.
Yeah. So have you heard of a lot of people? Do they ask you about certain herbs so they can carry it around in their bags?
Some do. I mean, I think of that as more like a hoodoo practice, but I know that has crept into Wicca and to more sort of eclectic witchcraft. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would say any kind of herb that was ruled by Venus would be good to put in your wallet to attract money, mm-hmm. even rose petals. Although that wouldn't probably be the first thing that I would think of. But, I'm just pulling a blank right now. I know that people
basil.
Do use, like, yeah, or I was going to say patchouli, which is not one that you would
favorite.
Usually grow.
My favorite.
Yeah, I really like it, too. And, in fact, this year I ordered a little plant start because I haven't been able to find patchouli seeds for a couple of years. So,
what climate do they do best in? Do you know offhand?
Well, they grow in India.
Yeah.
I don't know where you're at in California, but they...
down south, Southern L.A.
Oh, well, they should be okay there.
Yeah.
I mean, they need heat. It's like most plants that are sort of, I guess, tropical aromatics, the more heat they have, the better they smell. So like white sage, you know, I grew it up in upstate New York, and it had hardly any smell at all.
Good. I'm gonna try to do that because that is like I think one of my absolute favorite smells, and I would just like to try and grow it.
That's a real love or hate type smell too. I'd say
a lot of people
really hate it.
I know, but I'm a child of the 70s. And
me
you know,
too, yeah.
There you go, you know, it's patchouli, that was patchouli.
yes.
Yeah, and I tried growing some carnivorous plants, but I never was successful with those, you know, the Venus flytraps and all
uh-huh.
that. Pitcher plants, could never do that, so now I think I'm just settling for patchouli or something like that. Something
That's
else.
A good one.
But yeah, but do you believe that these little mojo bags or these little sachet bags that people either carry around with or sleep under their pillow or something, do you think they, in your opinion, are they viable? I mean, are they exactly doing what they're supposed to do in most cases?
I think it's just like any kind of magical. In that case, I feel like you're using the herb as a magical tool unless you grow it yourself. And that it works in a different way, I think, than if you had a piece of a plant that you grew yourself in there,
mm-hmm.
or even if you just found it yourself, you know, like out growing out somewhere.
Right.
But I think that the way that I think of dried herbs is working, well, they do have a material side that works, like, say, you know, they have some kind of chemical constituents that have different effects, like they could be antibiotic or they could be, you know, astringent or something. But
mm-hmm.
I also think they have an energetic effect.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically how I conceive of magic, as being this sort of moving of energies. And that what a witch does is learn how to sort of guide energies that are out there, or at least even become aware of energy flows that are out there mm-hmm. that have certain characteristics that you can come to recognize. So mm-hmm. I think that, I guess, I would think of herbs in a mojo bag being similar to crystals in a mojo bag.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. That makes good sense. All right, now I'm going to jump to something I found really interesting this week, and I was kind of jumping up and down when I started reading it and learning about it. I was reading that years ago, witches began to use codes in their workings. For example, the often referenced Eye of Newt is actually a code for a very simple and attainable flower. And the witches did it because they said, which is what they wrote, that they would have a great laugh about the unsuspecting fool who stole their recipes and went out searching for the ingredients listed in the code, like ending up battling for a lion's heart or bull's horns or mother's milk or worse, an Englishman's foot, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the most famous reference of using plants and codes is William Shakespeare's Macbeth,
uh-huh.
where the three witches chanted the Eye of Newt, Toe of Frog, Will of Bat, Tongue of Dog. So people read that today and they freak out thinking that witches kill these poor creatures for body parts. Seriously, and I did too when I was younger. But in fact, Shakespeare wasn't writing about animal mutilation at all. He was referring to the code names. So then I went digging, and I found out that Eye of Newt is actually mustard seed. Toe of frog is buttercup.
Makes sense, yep.
Wool of bat is, or holly leaves, and tongue of dog is a plant called hound's tongue. So I'm thinking, very clever, these witches. But, you know, in today's society, some people still frown upon witches when they hear, like, that stanza from Macbeth. And it's like, aha, I knew those witches were evil creatures. They harm people and they kill poor defenseless little animals. So now I'm just here clearing the air, people. For those of you who still think we do things like that, it was all code.
It goes back even farther than Shakespeare. The Greek magical papyrus has a section in it, and that's like from, I don't know, 800 BC or something. I would need to look it up. It has a whole section that lists parts that would be called animal parts. You know, they would be animal parts, but they're actually code for plants, plant parts, and it gives the equivalent. I actually have that up on my site because some people who feel, I guess, a lack of authenticity want to be able to kill animals to use in their practice because they feel like it gives them more power or that it's more traditional.
Right.
But my point is that it's not. It's not more traditional. It's just as traditional, if not more, to use plants because that's what people had access to, and because we have evidence that they actually gave these bogus names to plants, actually, for as far as I know, for the same reason you described, in order to fool people, to make them think that this was something that it wasn't, and also just to keep secret as a blind for people who were prying in where they shouldn't, you know, so that people could have a way to keep a secret in plain sight. You know, if you're saying you need to have the tongue of a dog, most people might not know that it was hound's tongue. So the plant. So at any rate, I found it from both ways, that there are people outside of witchcraft who, you know, like there's famous paintings by Goya that show witches killing children and stuff like that, babies. So, you know, there's certainly people who believe that many witches or most witches sacrifice animals. But in fact, most witches don't sacrifice animals.
No, they don't. I mean, face it, we even like bugs, okay? I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's love of all creatures, all of God's creatures, and no, I mean, all right, we can't lie and say there aren't some sects, some paths that still do that, some primitive thinking people, but the majority of us are not like that at all. We love all animals and all living creatures, so...
And even the ones who do, it's normally animals that people would eat anyways, like a chicken, you know. So it's like, it's kind of different than, you know, a bat.
Well, there's
or
some countries.
Or a cat, God forbid.
Some people eat bats. I've seen shows.
Oh, really?
Where,
I didn't know that.
So I don't know where it was, but I was like, blah, that was not good. Yeah, can you eat that bat and get rabies too? Because these weren't—they didn't look like.
That's a good point.
You know.
Yeah, they're a pretty good vector for rabies.
Yeah. So, bottom line, you know, just spreading the word out there that Eye of Newt, tongue of dog, will of bat, toe of frog, and all the other things in Macbeth are plants.
Yeah.
Real live plants. Yeah. Okay. All right. That's done. Okay. No more ranting. But that I did find that fascinating. I really did. When I went looking to see what was what. Mustard seed. Damn. You know, and a lot of them looked exactly like what they were called, in a sense.
Yeah.
So I can see where they got the names, but that was pretty cool. All right. So let's talk a little bit about a magical witch's garden. And we touched a little bit on it last time you were here about when we grow, how we grow our own, and how we can begin to feel the energy of each flower and plant and to be able to understand the alchemy of each one. So let's do it again, because there might be people that didn't hear. How does one go about starting a witch's garden? Because there are many ways to incorporate our magical practices into the garden, correct?
Yeah, and I think that you can have like a mundane garden, like you could have a vegetable garden that has, you know, that emphasize you could either interplant witchcraft herbs with your vegetables, or you can, you know, just choose to cultivate certain vegetables that are aligned with certain aspects, like watery fruits are typically considered moon, so like melons and squash, things like that. You could always do that for a moon garden instead of planting moonflowers or moonvine or anything that blooms at night. Or you can just mix them together. I mean, one of the neatest books I've seen about mundane gardening describes, and I can't think of the name of it, it's a British book, mixing together herbs and flowering plants and vegetables all in one garden and interplanting them. And they just had beautiful gardens. And I thought, this is a great way to for witches to grow gardens, too. I mean, it's always nice to have things in separate places, and then, you know where everything is. And everybody gets along because they have their own place. But I also, on the other hand, I also like growing things in pots. And since I've gardened for a long time in not very good soil, or under trees, you know, very rocky stuff, I grew a lot of things in pots, and it's great. And it's a perfect way to grow witching plants.
Yeah, and like I said, I still do things in pots, and sometimes the roots just say, bye, pot, I'm going underground now.
Bust through sometimes. They just really want to be, you know, in the real dirt.
Yeah, I can't blame them.
I've had that happen a bunch of times, or the opposite, which is kind of scary. I've had roots from trees climb up into the bottom of the pot and take it over. When I had things like lying on the ground in my yard with holes inside, you know, like in a nursery pot.
Yeah, I've got something that just infiltrated one of my potted geraniums. I'm going to send you a picture. I have no clue what this is, but it's starting to bloom. Starting to bloom, and I'm thinking, geranium doesn't seem any worse for wear, but you know how it is. Somebody gets in there and it makes it.
Yeah. Slowly they take over.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, rather annoying. All right, so let me ask you, as far as we're talking about magical plants, because here's something I don't know about anywhere else in the country, but here in California, the one thing that every garden is sure to get infested with is Wandering Jew.
Really?
There is no way. I mean, there's no plants around
mackerel.
Here. Yeah, I've got them in all the beds. Everywhere I look, I've got Wandering Jew, and they're pretty plants. I mean, some people call them weeds. They might be. They're very aggressive in the sense that they grow like hell. You can yank them out. They'll be right back. Is there any kind of a magical working for Wandering Jew?
Well, any kind of vine will always be good for, like, binding, or for creeping, like suppose you wanted to sneak around and see what somebody was up to, find it out through divinatory means. It would be helpful to ask for the help of something like that, a creeping vine, where is able to penetrate into almost any place. It has that skill. And it's very tough. It's very determined. So,
you bet.
You know, you might harvest some leaves from it and maybe dry them and burn them for, you know, help and divination. That, you know, especially if you're doing something with cords, I would think.
Yeah.
So, but in terms of, like, getting it to stop doing that,
good luck. It doesn't.
Yeah.
There's no way. I mean, you can pull them out. They will be back. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know where they come from. You don't see them in the neighborhood, but somehow they're, that's the way it was in this house. It's the way it was in my old house. It was just, you know, I mean, they're pretty little flowers and, you know, nice little vines, but they're really insidious.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. And I was reading something else, interesting ideas about magical gardens and stuff. And one of the things I read is if you cast circles outside, for example, for ritual or whatever, you can make a circular planting that'll mark your circle for you. It's very cool. I never thought about that. What kind of plants would be good I guess they would have to be ones that didn't grow real tall. I mean, just kind of like, I don't know. What would you suggest to make a magical circle with, or to outline a circle?
Gosh, it could be almost anything, I would think. But I would think of some kind of low bedding type plant.
Yeah.
Actually, I would think of anything. Well, I guess it would depend on what kind of stuff you did in the circle.
Right.
Like if I were going to do it, I probably would use marigolds because they have like the sun shape and that's circular, and you know, they have this peppery smell. A lot of people don't like the smell, but it's aromatic and it keeps things out.
Right.
Like it's like a lesser version of rue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, animals don't usually like marigolds, so animals come on two legs too. keep people out of your circle. And at the same time, it's stealth, because nobody would ever look at a circle of marigolds and think, oh, that must be a witch doing that.
Right, yeah.
So yeah. There's that kind of approach. But then, you know, you could put strawberries in a circle if you were doing love magic.
True.
You know, there's so many possibilities.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why I never thought of that, but I read it and I went, whoa, it was like that V8 moment. Gee, that's clever and so simple. And why am I so surprised by this, you know?
Well, there's I think in the Abramelin operation, now I can't remember. I've just been so long. You can have a circle of small trees to do magic in. And that would really work, especially if you had some fast-growing trees like arborvitae or something that fills in really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Even willows. I mean, you could make a really neat magical circle out of willow wands. You just buy a bunch, stick them in the ground, and you can even weave them together and stuff. I mean, there's so many possibilities.
Yeah, I really like the idea. And also, I was reading that you can make an outdoor altar as part of your garden. And you don't have it, you know, it could be covered a little bit if you want your privacy, but it's like incorporating the great outdoors into your gardening and your spell casting, your spell work at the same time. And then somebody suggested making a small sleeping area so that at least one night in the summer you can sleep outside with your plants and allow them to speak to you through your dreams or aid in your astral work.
I think that's really important. In fact, I've done it actually just by lying between the rows. You know, when I had garden that was in rows, or just lying on the lawn, the grass next to the plants.
Mm-hmm.
You could even put a hammock out. I mean, you could make it regular, but sure. I do think that it's, you know, like plants put on a whole different kind. It's like they totally shift gears at night and they grow in a different way. They put out different chemicals. Some of them produce perfumes for moths and that are really only strongly released at night.
Mm-hmm.
And those moths come around at night too. And I think that is learning a different aspect of the plant that you don't normally see. And it's good to, if you really want to get to know them, to see all of what they can be. Plus, you know, some of the plants that give a scent at night, the scent itself is psychoactive.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll affect your dreams for that purely material reason.
I had a beautiful night-blooming cirrus that would attract moths.
Fabulous.
Oh, and they smell so good. And it was right out the back door. And this is a little bit sad, but one of my cats passed away. And as we were going out to take her to the vet for cremation, we had to pass the cirrus because it was right on the step on the side of the porch. And it was in full bloom. I love those plants. They're gorgeous. And the smell. But we stopped and you know, we're holding the poor little cat. And all of a sudden, this moth came that I swear was close to the size of a saucer.
Yep.
And it was white. And it fluttered. It came over to the flower and it kind of, you know, did its thing on the flower. And then it came and went over to the cat. And it was almost like it came to collect its spirit or something. That's the way it sounded. It was, I mean, that's what it was. I was sitting there. I mean, I was crying because she had passed. But then here comes this huge moth that I'd never seen the likes of. And I wasn't, you know, I was like, oh my God, that's beautiful. And I figured it was being attracted to the scent of the cirrus because the cirrus has a wonderful smell and it only blooms at night and it's gorgeous. But then to flutter around the cat for a minute and then take off like, poof, you know, it's like you blinked and it was gone.
Uh-huh.
It was really amazing. And that was the first time I'd seen a night blooming plant attract anything.
I do think that the moths who attract to night blooming plants, most of the times they're really big.
Yeah.
They almost look like birds, you know, their bodies.
Yeah.
But I think they're very magical and for all sorts of reasons. But I've had various experiences with them. Mm-hmm. That I think I've mentioned that Datura has been sort of a plant for me. But I also very much love Nicotiana sylvestris, woodland tobacco.
Uh-huh.
And I usually grow it every year just because I really love the smell of the blooms at night. And they're pollinated by these big, gigantic moths. And one summer, I went out and I was messing around with. I'd be looking around, you know, or see if any moths were around, and just come and smell my flowers at night. And I went in the house. I was sitting there reading, and I probably read for about an hour. And I was going to go back outside, and I looked down on my shoulder, and there was a gigantic sphinx moth on my sleeve.
Those are the little
really
fuzzy ones, aren't they? Sorry.
Huh?
Aren't those the white fuzzy ones, the really, really beautiful?
They have like a gray patterned giant wings.
Yeah.
Their bodies are like sort of striped, I think, but their wings are what are distinctive for me.
Okay.
And they're huge, you know.
Yeah.
And I really felt like it was as soon as I went outside, I was like, oh my God, I don't want to disturb it and make it start flying around in the kitchen. So I took it out. I just walked carefully outside. And then it just flew off, but it was so, I don't know, it was just a very magical feeling. I can totally believe that they would help guide souls.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was the first thing that came into my head because it was just flit, 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 you know, like a little fairy kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
It was amazing. Now, you're talking about tobacco, in a sense. And, you know, many witches talk about giving something back to the land when they harvest, and they'll tuck tobacco, for example, in the soil. And someone mentioned to me that when you care for a garden, you're always giving something back to the land.
Yeah.
Right.
I feel like that very strongly.
So you don't have to necessarily give,
no.
You know, go out of your way. It's like every time you fertilize or you water, or you add compost or you grow your plants or you pick off bugs, you are giving something back to the land. But I think you said something on the last show that you did make offerings. I think it was to the mandrake or.
Yeah, that was after when I would harvest the root.
Yeah.
Would dig up the root and I would give it little drops of red wine on the root.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then I would scent it with some nice incense smoke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just to honor it and kind of welcome it, you know, to the upper world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's good either way, but, you know, for a while I thought, oh, God, I've been doing all this. I've never offered anything back. And then when I read this, it's like, Okay, I take care of it.
Yeah, you were doing it without even thinking about it.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's good to know, because people, again, you know, you hear one thing and it may not be exactly what you think it was. So that makes a big difference. Now, I found some interesting magical properties of plants to share, and you can just jump right in and as well. But like, for example, snapdragons, if you put them on your altar and they will reflected in a mirror, they're going to repel curses and it sends them back to where they came from. Catnip is a magnet for positive energies and luck. It can also be used in love spells and in conjunction with the placing of a rose quartz and red rose petals.
I think all the mints are really good for any kind of Venus stuff, like either love or money.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, how about, you were talking about marigolds. Okay, here. By stringing marigold around your home, you'll be sure to keep out evil spirits.
Yeah, I think that would help.
Says it also works on unpleasant or unwanted human visitors by repelling them as well. And you mentioned that earlier. you talked about the scent of marigold. So, yeah, okay, mm-hmm. that just validated what you were going to say. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because some plant, I mean, everybody's different. But I love looking at carnations. I don't like their aroma necessarily.
Really?
Yeah, I guess I'm more for the flowery things, you know, patchoulis and the jasmines and stuff like that. And somebody in Hitman in chat just talked about mother-in-law's plant. Well, the mother-in-law's tongue, it's Sansevieria.
Oh, I love those things.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's funny, the naming of plants. It truly is, because some of them have the strangest names. And these are just, you know, they would be considered succulents, right? And they're just like long and like a long tongue, I guess, and variegated in some cases. There's some out here that are variegated. But, yeah, naming plants. I mean, where they come up with them, I guess it's kind of like what the witches did. They give them names that kind of resemble what they look like, in a sense.
Yeah, and I think, people didn't know the Latin names anyways, but, like, I've got a copy of Gerard's Herbal, which is huge, and there are so many plants in there and all of them have common names, which really amazes me, because there's a lot of plants now that if you look them up, can't find a common name for them because we've kind of lost that relationship with those plants. And there's very few. Like, I mean, when you think about it, most people, what do they see? They see grass. They see the kind of plants that are used for bedding, like petunias and begonias and stuff. Right. And that's pretty much it. I mean, they might see some things like in a bouquet, but they don't know the regular herbaceous plants. They don't know the common names for them. Mm-hmm. And so that is kind of getting lost. It's this whole knowledge and that does not even touch upon, you know, how those plants might have been used by people in the past.
Yeah.
So it's kind of sad. Well, it's part of, I guess, our urbanization. And also that we've moved so much, and, you know, these, like, the whole idea of native plants, we aren't from most of the places where they're from, so it's like we don't know them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, like patchouli. Just like patchouli, yeah, my luck. I've got a question from the chat room. Penny wants to know, do portulacas have any special properties? She said her mom planted them all the time, and she really likes them as well.
I like them, too. I just always really like the beautiful, clear colors of their flowers. And they're certainly very, they seem to be very happy, pleasant plants. I always thought of them as kind of sun-associated, although I never looked them up. because they seem to really thrive and full of fun, and they have this kind of weird habit of spreading out from a center, you know, the stalks all flap down, and they'll spread out from the center with the flowers. But I would experiment. I mean, when I think of how they look, they kind of got a little bit of the succulent to them. But the flowers are more, I don't know. I'd have to think about it, but I would think of sun associations with that. And then that would be like, gentle protection, warming, relaxing, that kind of sun energy, enfolding, comforting.
Yeah, she was thinking of planting some on her balcony, and what you just said fits right into that. Go out in the balcony, sit with them, you know.
Yeah.
The sun thing, the comfort, the, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that makes a lot of sense. And you mentioned something about how we're losing things because of urban, where we live and stuff. But if someone is developing an interest in practicing plant magic, aside from growing their own, being the best advice possible, where would they begin? I mean, can people who live in urban areas have a successful garden on a balcony or an indoors garden as opposed to getting out and digging in a yard?
Oh, definitely. I think one of the best gardens I ever had was all in pots. I had lived in Florida, and I rented a place that had a screened-in porch. And there was nowhere to garden outside. It was all like this landscaped place. So what I did was I had my whole garden in pots somewhere on the carport, out in the carport, because the sun was too hot. Like, you couldn't really grow henbane in South Florida unless you're growing under a carport. But then I had all kinds of decorative pots on the screened-in porch, and that was just a wonderful garden. It really was. I loved it. I love to be out there, and the cats did too. But even if you don't have, and, you know, a balcony would be great, but even if you don't have that, I mean, there's plants that you can grow on a windowsill.
Right.
You know, you can grow sage. That's like such a powerful plant.
It is.
And, again, a good stealth plant, because lots of people grow sage for cooking. But it has all kinds of different uses. Heck, you could just, you know, grow it, pick some leaves, dry them, and there's your incense for various purposes. You know, there are a lot of things you can do like that, especially culinary type herbs, but even like miniature roses. Lavender is another one that I've grown in small pots inside successfully. And rosemary you can do. So there's all kinds of possibilities. I'm going to try some different ones myself this year, since I have only access to right now to a raised beds outside, but I want to have some plants inside because they have these gigantic windows here, and I just can't not take advantage of them. So I'm going to have the patchouli and lavender and some other herbs like that growing in the windows myself this year.
Perfect. Now, your website has some really good information. I was kind of mentioning that before anyway. You've got lists of the magical properties of many plants and essential oils, and you sell over 40 kinds of essential oils and seeds of all kinds and resins and incense and magical oils for rituals and a whole lot more. And what I really found fascinating was like the links on some of the on the page, you have links to really neat places. Like there's a link to what plants were grown in medieval gardens.
Yeah, I love things like that.
Yeah, me too. And then you've got zone maps. You've got planetary and elemental correspondence charts. You've got, I love this one, Cornell's Witchcraft Library online, which includes texts from the 1500s to the 1800s. There's also a link to your blog, The Alchemist's Garden. So please let everybody know how to find Alchemy Works. I spent the better part of an afternoon looking around the site and going to the various links, and it was fun.
Oh, thank you. My site is www.alchemy-orcs.com. That's A-L-C-H-E-M-Y, a hyphen, W-O-R-K-S.com.
Yeah, so much there and so much fun. And so you, in the last couple of seconds, you would clearly advise people who even say they don't have a green thumb to invest a little time and effort and grow something, correct?
Definitely. And, you know, to be a real gardener, you got to kill a lot of plants.
Oh, I'm so happy to see you hear that.
You really do. I mean, I've never met a gardener who didn't kill tons of plants without meaning to, and they're very forgiving. You know?
That's good, because I wasn't sure, and I, you know, lately I'm doing fine. I haven't had such luck with a couple of cactus and stuff because they got a little overwatered. But not intentionally, and I hope their spirits don't come and, you know, stick me
in.
Yeah,
especially with those little tiny spines.
No, I don't have that guy anymore. No, he's
Oh, that's gone. Good.
Thank goodness.
I know just what you mean about that.
Oh, boy. Yeah, well, that's a whole other show. But anyway, so good. So, yeah, everybody, just do try. See what happens. See if you
Definitely.
Can get in touch with the plant spirit. See and get in touch and nurture a plant. I mean, that's the greatest form of witchcraft, is to nurture and grow and create, right?
Yes.
Good. Well, I want to thank you for a very knowledgeable, filled, and interesting show. And please come back. I mean,
oh, I sure will. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed myself.
Good. And I want to thank everyone for listening in, because they enjoyed themselves too. You should have seen the chat room. And until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
This has been another edition of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Be sure to tune in next week at this same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2014. Moonlight Hall by Kevin MacLeod, licensed through Incompetech.com.